Ready, shout. All right. Good morning, everybody. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, June 20th, 2017. One adjustment on the agenda. We're going to pull our discussion of Crestview and the possible funding up to the very front. So that's what we'll do right after public comment, and then we'll move on to agency reports unless there's objection from the board.
None.
And hearing none, please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you and good morning. Again, this is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda. If you would rather not address your comments right now and wait till we have the conversation on any of these issues, you're sure welcome to do that as well. Anybody wish to speak to the board right now as we start the meeting? Okay, seeing no one moving to the microphone, we're going to move on, and this is where we're pulling items up. So this is item under additional items, item number 6 and number 7. Two things. Discussion and consideration of setting a public information date for Crestview MHRP Mobile Home Park residents. And then the second thing we're going to discuss while Carla is up here is discussion discussion consideration of items eligible as qualifying expense for Crestview Mobile Home Park relocation assistance. Carla, let's start with setting a public meeting for out there.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
Carla with Community Services. Deb Shildrath has had communication with George Velitzos about availability to host a public informational meeting for the Crestview residents at his property. The date and time that would work for him would be June 28th, which is Wednesday of next week. And we're suggesting a 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. time for the meeting.
Mm-hmm. Super. Anybody have an issue with that?
Works.
Okay.
I had a conversation with one resident out there on Saturday morning who pointed out that he worked until 6 o'clock. So he had requested, if possible, a 6:30 start time. However, Deb and I were talking about it before the meeting, and we could always bring him up to date if
sure.
he knew, you know, to...
So I think the vision for this is going to be as informal as we can possibly make it. It's clearly a public meeting. We're clearly going to want to have minutes and have a recording of the public portion of the meeting. But we're also going to be there to assist the residents and make sure they know what assistance is available as we move through this. So I would suggest if we start tweaking it for every one person, we're going to be tweaking it all the way through. I'd suggest we leave it at 6, and like you say, Loris, we'll make sure that we bring him fully up to speed.
Okay, great.
Do I have a motion to set the meeting for June 28th at 6 p.m. At the Velitzos property?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second, so that's right across the street from Mobile Home Park. Do we need to think about any kind of traffic control? Do we need to have some kind of law enforcement out there? Just can you get busy right there along Lincoln Highway, especially at 6 o'clock? That would be my one concern.
I think that would be a good idea, just so that we have that ability to make sure that people are able to cross.
So I'll reach out to the sheriff and ask if he's able to provide that for us. Anything else that we need to note or make sure we're thinking of?
I can't think of any.
Well, to record it, we may want to have a small public address system out there, or, you know, a microphone at least and a speaker, just
okay.
to make sure that everybody's legible. If we've got a windy day, we
yep.
could have to get very close to each other to hear each other. So that's my only thought.
Can you work on the logistics of having that stuff done?
Yep, I'll work
okay.
on that. Definitely.
Perfect.
I would like to ask if you'd like us to purchase water or any other supplies.
Yeah, I think we should absolutely. I don't know if we need to have a lot of supplies. I think we definitely need to have bottled water available.
I agree.
No.
Nope.
Okay.
That's it.
So a motion and a second. We're done with discussion. Chitty?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. June 28, 6 p.m. Those of you here who live in Crestview, please pass the word. Please make. We'll do everything we can to reach out, but we need your help letting everybody know. It is going to be as informal as we can make it. It's going to be completely non-threatening, and we're just talking through what some of your options are as this thing moves forward. Okay? Thank you. All right, so the next item is discussion consideration of items eligible as qualifying expense for Crestview relocation assistance. Last week, the Board of Supervisors approved up to $3,000 relocation assistance per location, per mobile home that's out there. Now we're talking about what allowable expenses there are that can go into that $3,000. So we're not going to write any individual a check. We'll pay service providers who help you guys with whatever it is you need help. Now we need to determine exactly what those items are. Carla, go ahead.
Yep, you bet. I submitted a list of suggested items for the board to consider, and I'll read through those. First month's rent at the new location, deposit for rent and utilities, pay off existing or past due utility balance when a utility bill is in the applicant's name or a household member's name. We're suggesting that the bill shall be for utilities that have been incurred while they're residing at Crestview Mobile Home Park. Pet deposit or additional rent fee for pet, considering the first month rent only for that. Apartment rental application fees, preparation work, moving expenses and setup fees associated with moving a mobile home, costs associated with boarding of pets, storage units, hotel costs, moving company costs, or other items at the director's discretion. As I'm trying to be comprehensive with this list, but you never know what may come up. So that's why I added that item there.
And so what's not on here that I would have interest in us talking about is demolition fees for a trailer that is very clearly, there's lots of uncertainty out there about who owns what trailer. There's some of these trailers that it's very clear that they're in the ownership of the occupant. And if that occupant is deciding to move on and not, you know, they don't have a place to put it, I believe it's their responsibility to get that mobile home disposed of. But that's a pretty hefty price tag to get that done. I'd like us to discuss whether it's appropriate in those cases that the mobile home is very clearly owned by the individual. If we're not sure who's owned it, if one person says that person owns it and another person says, no, that person owns it, whatever our treasurer's office shows as the owner of record would be who it would be. And if it's one of the residents who's living there, I'd like us to have these dollars also be available for disposal of that mobile home. Otherwise, we're going to get into a huge mess out there of abandoned mobile homes that everybody says, I don't own.
My counter to that would be the fact that move to an immediate sale, knowing that you're going to have some fixed costs to liquidate the facility.
And I'll weigh in on the mill, okay? Because I do understand that if clear title is there with a resident, then that obligation is there, and it can impact their financial situation in the future, possibly.
Sure.
Okay? And so that's up to each owner of the mobile home how they choose to apply for the up to the $3,000. So I can understand in a case that they may not be able to afford the fee, but if we help them with that, that would still have them keep their credit or their future opportunities going, whereas I would be very surprised if a judgment were not slapped against them should they leave it there and it was up to the park owner to remove the fees. I don't think there's been anything so far. It's up to the chairman if he wants to recognize you now or go forward.
Yeah. Come on up so we can hear you on the recording. And start by introducing yourself and telling us where you live.
I'm Stuart Jackson. I live at the Crestview Mobile Home Court. He has told me that
and the disposal of the trailers, he has a company that's going to come in, and they will dispose them, but he can't pay them to dispose them. He's left the contract. He wants to take a lower bid and have them come in and dispose the trailers, and then whatever money they get out of, you know, selling them the trailers, that's their basically fee for doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be for the ones that you do that the residents don't have a clear title to,
right,
correct?
Right, the ones that are basically abandoned, pretty much. So.
Okay. Has he mentioned anything to you, Stuart, or any of the residents that you know about the ones that are in your name or the residents' name?
Well, we just need to, you know, get the taxes caught up on them.
That's all he said?
Yeah. And then he's said he hasn't disposed of some of the trailers because some of them still have taxes, and he doesn't feel like it's his responsibility to pay all the taxes of the, you know, owed on some of the old trailers. So.
Depends on who owns them.
Yeah.
As to whose responsibility it is.
Right.
So Loris, I completely agree with what you said. We don't want, this is a hard enough situation for the people that have lived at Crestview a long time. What we really want as much as possible is to give these residents a clean break. I mean, it's going to be a hard situation. They're going to have to move somewhere else. We don't want some kind of baggage going along with them. And if they very clearly own, have title to their trailer, mm-hmm. I believe it is their responsibility to figure out what happens to that trailer. And that could be sell it, have it demolished, have it moved. I mean, there are options, but just abandoning it and leaving it there, you put yourself in jeopardy of it following you down the road.
I think what we really want to avoid, what I really want to avoid here, is ending up compensating the park owner
right.
for demolition of trailers.
I agree.
Okay? We're not helping the park owner. We want to help the residents.
100%.
One thing maybe would be comfortable about those who have clear title as of June 1st, which is what we did with the assistance package, so that we don't have a lot of contracts all of a sudden showing up, you know, so that if the title is shown prior to or on June 1st, then that title belongs to the assumed resident who's living in it. But we basically stop from future titles transferring that might end up.
Yeah, I think absolutely you want to say as it existed on June 1st. I completely agree with that. And I'm not talking about, so in my mind, all these dollars, anything we're talking about here, goes straight to the company that is providing the service. Now, I haven't heard of Brandt disposing of these trailers himself.
Right? He doesn't have the money to.
I mean, it's an outside entity that's coming in and either moving them or scrapping them for salvage or whatever. And all I'm suggesting, and this would be us working through the owner of the trailer straight to the vendor to get this done. Carla, tell me about the red flags. I'm sure this raises lots of red flags for you. Tell me about the red flags that this raises.
One of my I certainly understand what you're saying about if it is vacated, the difficulties it could cause for a person. I'm also concerned about the cost to get rid of that trailer if it is needing to be demolished. I believe we've been quoted $1,000 per trailer, so
right.
So that then reduces that amount for that person, certainly. It's just something that our office is not familiar with working with, so we would look for assistance from others, I think, in how to set all of that up and monitor.
Well, the first thing we need to know is how many of these trailers meet the definition that we just laid out.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard, Barney, I don't know if you've heard how many of the trailers meet the definition that we
just laid
out. I
don't see the treasurer's office here, and I think that they're a informational component to this conversation, so I had stopped down at the end of last week and talked to them about On the Loop, those people on water service, and I believe that there was, I think the number six in my head was nine non-Crestview-owned trailers on the loop that we're talking about. My concern is, as somebody has titled to something, is the DOT going to allow them? Is it roadworthy in the DOT's mind? Because in talking to Joe Milligan, the gentleman that Brandt had contacted and had come up to the park here in May, that
there would be a $1 million liability policy purchased. There would have to be a clear title updated and current, and any back taxes before the trailer itself would move. That's what anybody that would owe against these trailers would be. That would be the hill that they would have to climb.
If it would be comfortable for those in the audience who are from Crestview only, if it's comfortable for you, okay, could we maybe get an indication of those who are here, how many have cleared title to their trailer? Thanks. Okay.
All right, so that we can move on, how about this recommendation? Let's deal with the items that are before us. Let's don't deal with the idea of disposal or moving of the mobile homes that are in clear title, and we can deal with that on the 28th as a consideration item.
Okay.
We will again gather more information by that time. We'll get the treasurer to tell us exactly how many of these mobile homes qualify under the criteria we're talking about and who owns them, and we can have a detailed conversation about that one item on the 28th. I think it's important that we go ahead and get the rest of this approved so that you guys have some certainty of what's an allowable expense as you start looking at where you're going to go next. Is that acceptable?
I would say, yeah, that's a side issue that I think that both ourselves and Carla need a little bit of time to process. So I do have some questions on some of the proposals, though.
Go.
And they're just time frames. On the cost associated with boarding pets, how long? For how long?
Thought on that?
I would say probably a minimum of 2 weeks, maybe.
Yeah.
And really, I guess I was looking at this as they have access up to that $3,000. So.
Okay. I mean, how they apportion it or where they would like to, you know, they have to direct.
Yeah. It's up to them.
Okay, on storage units, how long? Wait, maybe this is the answer you already gave. Same thing. And then hotel costs, same thing.
Same thing. I mean, they're up to, and they know what their needs are, right? And it could vary from
this
each
This is not
one.
A top-down driven
right.
thing. I'm just looking at it just like on the time frame. You know, and then when you get dealing with a moving company, you know, usually that comes on a mileage basis.
Right.
That you're sitting there looking, if you have a longer trip to take with something, it's going to be that much more money.
Yeah, so with the exception of first month's rent, right, that one's time certain.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else in here I don't see as time certain. I see the limiting factor as being the
$3,000.
Yep.
Okay.
I'd like to talk about that first month's rent and something that has occurred because I ran into someone on Saturday morning also.
Mm-hmm.
Friday afternoon. Sorry, I was out there. Friday afternoon.
He blurs together.
Okay, yeah, it does. Okay. Who actually had been one of the 30 people that had to leave last year to get the park down below the number of hookups to get rid of the DNR. Okay. And that person is still storing some of his family's things in a little shed that is out back his now abandoned trailer, that mobile home he was in. And the reason he's doing that is he, his wife, and his, I believe she's a 9-year-old daughter, are still homeless. We gave $1,000, but once the money ran out paying for the storage unit, okay, they lost all of their furniture and everything. So this doesn't fix what I'm about to propose, but it did make me realize even more that the rents where some people would be moving to or housing costs are going to be significantly more than what they're paying out at Crestview right now. And that in addition to a first month's rent, possibly we should be putting in there and a rent subsidy for a few months, okay, that they've got to pay part of their rent, but they can come and use that up to $3,000 for a rent subsidy. Because what hit me about this man's story is that he had to leave. He works, I believe, a minimum wage job, And so the minute he left the park, he was out of resources once the $1,000 ended. And they, by the time they were covering other things, did not have money to stay in an apartment and couldn't even continue with the storage. So I'd like to see in the rent subsidy of maybe 20% or 25% of a rent to at least give a little bit of adjustment. For many people, this may mean having to take on a second or third job where, you know, and rearrange their lives significantly. I suspect some people are on a fixed income, and I don't have an answer for that other than a rent subsidy might help with a stabilization process. So I'd like to consider that for a few, you know, say 3 months, okay?
3 months, 25%.
Yes.
Thoughts, Marty?
I can see this is a finite pool of people. Laura tells a very good story, and I think she might have been very surprised in what she found out there in the last several days. And it comes with its own story, and I think while we're talking about public spending of public taxpayers' dollars, I think the ultimate goal of seeing closure here can be met, but we need to take into account the human component of the story. And that's really what we're talking about here today. How do we do it best? We are not guarantors of success or bright outcomes, but we are prepared to stand here and do what we believe to be is the best opportunity for making a clean cut and move out of here. So I think that I have support for what Laura said. I think that that's appropriate. My question and the hardship falls on Carlos. That the thing is, as we use June 1st, as a fixed date to tether on, I mean, I think the hardship comes from determining who's fact there. Because the thing is, I suspect as people leave and transition, as they take advantage of this program, I'm not looking for backfills to all of a sudden say, hey, I live in Crestview.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I also became aware of another situation. I think, Stuart, you shared with me. There is a owner out there who is away until July, right, the end of July.
Yeah.
And he is allowing someone to live in his trailer, his mobile home right now. And as I kind of answered to Stuart, it was just my answer, not this board's answer, but was, well, the gentleman who lives there permanently, it would be the person who would be eligible for aid, while the people who are there temporarily are like guests, and they would not be okay. But then the other gentleman I referenced on Friday night, he's still homeless, and he's already taken had the $1,000, but he clearly is coming back, or his family's coming back. That's where their clothes are being stored, other than a day or two. That's what few goods they have left are in this little shed. Do we consider them still residents or not?
Sadly, no. They aren't still residents. I mean, I think it's really clear. I don't think it's not heartwarming, but it's really clear that they're not residents there. This is not a catch-all. This is trying to help those residents that live there, and I agree with permanently, as of June 1st, not those that are visiting as of June 1st. We got to try to take care of what we can. We can't take care of everything.
I do understand that. I did feel that I needed to bring this forward because of it may not be the only person who's going to come forward with a gray area.
Sure.
And we are...
We're trusting our directors.
Good
thing we've got a great director.
Yeah, Carla and yeah, I agree. I'm sorry we're putting this on you.
That's okay. We're glad to be able to help.
Yeah. Deb, thoughts?
All that we can.
I just wanted to bring up one of the things that Carla is working on, too, is reinstating the MOU with Salvation Army. We had that in place late last fall. What that does is allow people to stay at the Ames Motor Lodge, and we pass the money through the Salvation Army. They're able to get a reduced rate. So that will be an option for individuals as well. So we've got the document out there. Salvation Army needs to review it and plan it, and then we'll bring it back to the board.
And I have the question I have on that. Now, I know this is going back a little ways, but when DuPont was under construction, there were no rooms available at the Ames Motor Lodge. I remember Ben Vic Moss from ERP coming forward and stating they're all booked up, and they're getting a much higher rate for the construction workers. So
okay.
We need to make sure about availability of resources.
Yes. Okay. I think a lot of this is going to be talking to individuals through what plans they might have. And some of those plans are short-term. Some of them will be long-term. But, yeah, if there's not availability at Ames Motor Lodge, then we have to look at some other options for them. But that is something that can be checked into.
It's not for us to know the specifics. It's on the residents to bring their specifics to us. I mean, we can sit there and scheme and what if. But I think that I could not try to communicate more clearly the fact that the residents need to take it upon themselves. This is your future that's being discussed here, and it's incumbent upon you that we have contact organization and people here that stand ready to help you as you transition. But we're not coming to you. We need you to come to them. And we'd like that clearly communicated today.
I have one other item to consider, about adding, once again, based upon just all of the communications and experiences in the last week we've all kind of had. I'd like to add gas money or herd of bus tickets onto this list. I think we discovered in one resident's situation last week that gas money was needed just to get the car to Ames and back. Once again, Carla, we would leave it with Carla to determine what would be an appropriate of a specific trip or what you would feel comfortable with. But and then with as Herta, you know, we utilized Herta this morning for two residents. I don't know if either of you have ever been for a while without a car, but I've lived in two big cities without a car, and then actually in Des Moines for a while without a car. And I can tell you that if it were not for great public transit in all three of those, I'd have just driven myself nuts. And so while we have great SkyRide transportation in Ames, I can tell you that any time you have to go off a SkyRide route or anything, all of a sudden transportation becomes difficult, and especially if housing may have to be looked at outside of Ames.
Sure. Doesn't that fall under other items at director's discretion?
Okay. Sure. Okay. That works, too.
I mean, if it's a necessary component in part of making the transition to something that we are pulling for being stable long-term, then in my mind it falls under the director's discretion, and the only caveat there is we've got a maximum limit of
$3,000. Okay. That works, too.
Okay. Thoughts of the 25% subsidy for up to three additional months of rent?
I think that's reasonable. I also think it's important to point out, with the board agreeing to waive the requirement of having residents go to other agencies first, I think that'll help make a cleaner and smoother transition in this process. We'll be communicating all this to those other agencies, inviting them to the meeting then on the 28th. Those agencies, several of them, because of limited dollars, have a once-a-year use policy. And so it's possible some of those individuals may have already used those agencies, or after utilizing the relocation funds from the county, if they're still needing some assistance, they could still go to those agencies. So there's ways to bridge those gaps, and I think it'll help us smooth the transition. So thank you.
Outstanding. All right. We ready for a motion?
Can I ask a clarifying question, if I may? For the 25%, is that 25% of their rent or 25% of their take-home pay that they would pay towards the rent?
I took it as rent.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rent.
Thank you.
Carl, I understand you've had some reach out already in this respect from some residents.
Yes, we have. We've received two applications so far and one phone call, I believe, and we plan to follow up with those individuals after today's meeting. And I did bring with me applications. If there are individuals today that would like to meet when we're done here, we can work on those applications and start that process as well.
I have nothing.
My only other thought would be maybe getting some flyers over to the park to announce the meeting on the 28th.
Yeah, and I've got a template from the last informational meeting that was held, and so we'll plan to update that and look to get those distributed.
Yes, as I recall, getting on the property and making sure that any flyers that we handed out or put up stayed up and didn't vanish. Counting on you guys to spread the word. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, so to be clear, we're talking about this list as proposed. Carla read it all. We're talking about all additionally up to 3 months' rent beyond the first month that we're willing to pay all of. So it would be 4 months total that we're talking about, with the last 3 months of that being up to 25% of the cost of rent.
Correct.
Okay. Somebody willing to make the motion?
Up to a $3,000 cap.
And that we established last week. Yeah, $3,000 is our hard cap.
Right. I would make that motion. Do you need me to repeat it, Shelley? Or okay, thank you.
Second.
Motion second. Further discussion?
None.
Anything to add from you guys? Crestview residents, anything that we're missing that you want us to consider before we vote on this? Okay. Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Wednesday night, 28th, 6 p.m., we're here to help. This is a tough situation. You guys are going through a tough situation. We're going to try to help any way we can. Have your friends and neighbors try to get there Wednesday night so we can have the conversation. You guys need to be able to find some certainty, and you need to use this to be something positive in your life, okay? We're going to try to help. Okay. With that, we're done with Crestview for today. Those of you that were on HERTA, you got a few minutes before the bus gets back. Carla's available to talk with any of you guys out in the hallway who'd like to visit with her. And we'll see you all, I hope, Wednesday night. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks for coming.
All right, back up to the top of the report, top of the agenda, and it is a full agenda, so I'm going to endeavor to move us on fairly rapidly. And our first is an agency report, University Community Child Care, our friend Penny Pepper. I saw her in the back. Hi, Penny. How is everything today?
It's good.
Thank you so much for coming over.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm glad I remembered to
close that door for me.
The correct exit. I almost forgot. Okay. I have several things, and I'll go through it. And then if you have any questions, you please let me know. UCC. Is a private nonprofit child care center. We're currently located on the north side of the ISU campus in the Shaletter University Village housing area. We started out in Hamel Court Quonset Hut in 1971, and we stayed there until we ended up in seven different Hamel units, all in a little cluster. We were our own village. And then in 2004, we got to move to our current site. Across from the golf course. We're governed by a board of directors that consists of parents and community members. UCC provides full and part-day early care and education services for infants, toddlers, and preschoolers throughout the year. We have care before and after school for children in kindergarten through fifth grade, and then in the summertime and other vacations, they can be there all day. So we have many of them there all day right now. We also provide care for mildly ill children in the Comfort Zone program. And this past year, we had 43 Story County children using it for a total of, well, not this past year. This was from a 15-16 stop for a total of 92 visits. So they came several times. In total, though, we provide care for 90 to 100 children every week. And they're cared by 25 permanent staff, which include the teachers, two registered nurses for the Comfort Zone, the food program staff, office support staff, myself, and the assistant director. We also, during the school year, have about 25 to 30 ISU students working for us, and they are, the majority of them are eligible for the College Work Study program, so we get to pay them 25% of their hourly rate, so that is why we can do that. And then these people are either extra help on any given day, or they're the ones that fill in for a full-time teacher while they have a vacation day or a sick day. And they are also primarily in education of some sort, so they're using this as experience for what they plan to do in the future. So, you know, we're providing a service to them, too, as well as them to us. We receive funding from ASSET, which supports the reduced fees on the fee scale for student families that have incomes below 225% of poverty. ISU provides both monetary funding and in-kind services. The building we use is rent-free. And then the Department of Residence at ISU provides funding that we use primarily for occupancy expenses like mowing and snow removal, that kind of thing. ISU currently has a federal grant called the ISU Campus Grant Program, and it supports fees for Pell Grant-eligible ISU students enrolled in on-campus child care centers. It was last renewed in 2014, and it's in the process of renewal right now. Keep your fingers crossed. This program helps student families by paying 60% of their monthly fees, so it's a huge help. In addition to the fee scale, then they have those fees reduced further if they're Pell Grant eligible. And in fiscal year 15-16, we had 31 families that participated in that. We also get funding from the USDA for the Children's Meal Program. Boost provides scholarships for preschool children. I think we have 14 for the current year just ending. UCC also works with the Ames School District and the statewide voluntary preschool program for four-year-olds, and we're a community site for this program. The benefits to the children, of course, are the additional supports we get from the school district for the early care and education, but the parents also get 10 hours of the care free. So it's just another way to help families. The client statistics for 15-16 show that we provided care for a total of 197 children. 85 for that year had student parents, 105 were Ames residents. We had 3 that were Story County residents, and then 4 did live outside of Story County. One child belonged to one of our staff people, and 3 ISU staff used Comfort Zone, just happened to live outside of Story County. 49% of the families were below the 225 of the poverty guidelines, and then 30% were below 150. So although hopefully they're temporarily low income, that is very low income. We had 60 children who had their fees paid by a third party, such as the Department of Human Services, the Campus Grant, the Boost Empowerment Scholarship, and the four-year-old preschool fund. I think the things that are great about UCC, our strengths include the fact that we have accreditation from the National Association for the Education of Young Children. We've had this since 2000. Our last renewal was October 2016, so we're good for another 5 years there. We also have a 5-star rating on the Iowa Quality Rating System, and we were renewed just recently for another 2-year term, and that goes through March 2018. Those things help us meet a terrifically higher, I think, level of quality than non-accredited centers. Staff work very hard to make sure this happens. And again, it's a good example for the folks working for us to take away when they go on to their professional lives. We have staff that take advantage of continuing education through you know, the child care resource and referral of Central Iowa, State of Iowa trainings through the Iowa Association for the Education of Young Children. There's also a program called TEACH that is sponsored by the Iowa Association for the Education of Young Children, and it's a program to support staff currently working in child care to further their education. And we have two staff now that have finished their associate's degree while working full-time for us. We have a third one right now working on it, as well as we have a teacher working on renewing her teaching license through this program. So I think that's a very wonderful thing. Also, we have folks that have worked for us quite a while. Out of the 25 permanent staff, 5 have worked between 2 to 5 years, 4 have worked from 5 to 10, and we have now 8 people that have worked more than 10 years. So that is also...
And some of them a lot more than 10 years,
well,
right?
Some of them a lot more than 10 years, seriously. I have a couple that are at between 20 and 25.
Yep.
Yeah, so...
They would have been there for Pamela Court, though.
Well, yes, and so was I.
How long was that? Well, you know, just being old, knowing that what it was, when did that go away? I'm sitting there looking at what...
In total, when did it go
away? Yeah, when all the quantities go away.
Oh, gosh, I cannot remember the year, but it hasn't... When we moved out in 2004, I really think the grocery store was all that was left.
Really?
After that, and then it moved to West Ames at Colorado Junction. So we were there at the very end of it. The weaknesses that I think we have are the fact that, you know, there's a lengthy waiting list for infants and toddlers, and we just take the names. We can only take 12 babies, 16 toddlers, so that, you know, we get people off the list and offer them enrollment, and then boom, we have...
Is that a staffing limitation or...
Space. And fine, even if we had the space... It would then be financial, but it is the space. We're at the max that we can take care of for what we have.
How do you, once people go on the waiting list, are they tiered after that? Do students get first on the waiting list?
We do have a student waiting list and then a non-student waiting list. And we know how many spaces we can afford to offer student families. And so if the family leaves and we know that it should be replaced, they should be replaced by a student, then we go to that waiting list.
Thank you. So
yeah, you keep your makeup in terms of student families versus non-student families pretty similar all the time.
We do. Yeah. It's affordability.
Right. It's the only way you can fund the program is to manage those two items.
Mm-hmm. It is. And we do go through the waiting list at least a couple times a year, trying to find out if folks still want to be on it in an effort to keep it current. And we'll offer a space to families twice, and then after that, if they say no both times, then we take them off too. So you're not on the list for life, so that the numbers we have usually are fairly current. And the other difficult thing always is balancing affordability for families and while trying to pay staff somewhat more every year so we can hopefully get to an appropriate amount in someone's lifetime. I don't know if it'll be mine, but right now for this year, the lowest cost we can offer in the infant program to a student family is $7.55 a month. That's so huge. But it costs
$1,300.
To provide that service. Yeah, but that's... So thankfully, there are other options to help support those families, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I do have a few comments that I can share from parents that I put on these recent asset proposal. The daycare's been a relief for me, especially with the absence of family's help, as well as allowed me to work all day from 8 to 5. It has helped me be able to focus on my studies instead of working multiple jobs and or piece together a group of part-time sitters for my children to make ends meet. The ISU student rates make it possible for me to have my daughter attend a high-quality after-school program. Without these rates, my daughter wouldn't be able to attend UCC. and then specifically with regard to the comfort zone, helped us attend our new jobs. I just recently started my job, so it helps that I can make it to work. Being a single mother, it made a huge difference. I'm extremely grateful for this brilliant institution.
That's outstanding.
Yeah.
Penny, thank you so much. We're so appreciative for what you and your staff do. And highly necessary service, and it's amazing to me that we work, that you work so hard to provide what we hope are affordable rates, and the cheapest you can go is $755 a month.
I
just speaks to the realities that are out there for our low-income families.
Exactly.
Questions for Penny?
No, thank you.
Penny, thanks so much.
Well, thank you.
Story time is postponing again. They're going to report on July 11th, so that takes us to consideration of minutes from June 13th.
I would so move approval as they are presented.
Second.
Motion to second. Further discussion, additions, notations. Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes passed. Personnel actions as listed. Board.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion. Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda. Board.
I would move as presented with a note to staff to please make sure that the quote from Easy Vote is added to the record. This is a piece of paper that got left out, but the number's there on our...
It's here as part of the formal record.
Okay, super. So I move as presented.
Second.
Motion and a second. Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda passes.
Hi, Barry.
Barry, thanks for coming over, man.
Yeah. Got pretty security.
Yeah, that's
right. Hey, while I've got you informally, can I ask you to take back to the sheriff the possibility of traffic control Wednesday night at on Lincoln Highway right there for that meeting?
I will. I've already got it online.
Thanks, buddy. All right. Man, we are humming along now. So that takes us to the end of consent agenda. No public hearing items today. Additional items, discussion and consideration of fiscal agent agreement and report. We've got Marion Cressy and Lisa Markley who are going to talk to us. We're going to start with Marion.
Good morning, Marion.
Hi, Marion.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I wish I had as nice a laid-out report as Penny did, but you get me instead. Foods Together for Children is a private, not-for-profit corporation who serves children birth to age 5. We get our funding is from the state of Iowa to serve home visiting programs, family support programs, and as Penny mentioned, scholarships for low-income families so that they can attend preschool. And as she pointed out, it's very expensive, and so it's very important for us to be able to help children get into high-quality settings, because that quality is really important. You can put somebody in front of a videotape of Barney, or you can help them learn their colors and numbers and all those good things, too. On the whole, I say Iowa is doing very good, but as a state, we can do better. For example, the recent kids count rating for the whole country came out ranking Iowa as number 5 in places for to raise children. So I think that's a good thing. I think it speaks to how we value childhood and our children.
But who's ahead of us?
What?
Who's ahead of us?
Oh.
Tell me who won.
Probably Minnesota might be one.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt.
Vermont and New Hampshire. Two others.
All right.
I'll send that over to you.
I'd like to see that, Mary.
Yeah. And areas where we can do better as a state is that 15% of children live in poverty. And so that's clearly an area that we can do better. For Story County, that number is 10%. So we are doing better than the state as a whole. But spirit, I'd love to see that number go to zero. But and in terms of preschool attendance, Story County is we're right at the state average, about 48% of the kids in preschool. Our percentage of free and reduced lunch here in the county is about 25%. So those are just, you know, examples of things that the need is out there to support families with low income. And as Penny pointed out earlier, my concern is that anecdotally I'm hearing that there's problems with length of waiting lists that are starting to get into, especially infant care, are growing. I mean, she says their waiting list is constant, and so they don't know, you know, how big the need is. It's just it never goes away. And in general, you know, the affordability then for low-income parents, because I think that that price of infant care is, even people who are considered middle-income, you know, it's quite a sticker shock, or even trying to find a place to place a child. In terms of outcomes, one of the things that we look at is how are children doing when they enter kindergarten on what's called a FAST assessment. And the state average is 68% proficient on that assessment at the beginning of kindergarten, whereas in the Boone Story area, because we also serve Boone County, we're at 78%. But there are variations within school districts, and so we'd like to work to identify, you know, like those ones. There's one district, the lowest is at 59%. So that's, you know, it seems that, you know, the teachers have to work a lot harder to get those kids up ready to, you know, they talk about by third grade, the difference between learning to read and reading to learn, that if you get past that threshold and you're behind, your chance of catching up to your peers gets harder and harder. We have an annual budget. State funds this year will, or going into this year, will have about $630,000. And for the previous 5 years, it's been pretty much flat funding. But due to the recent cash flow problems at the state, we took about a $20,000 cut in the middle of the budget year, and then it'll look like about an additional $45,000 cut going into next year. So we had to reduce the amounts on our contracts, reduce the number of scholarships, and in discussing this at our most recent board meeting, a board member brought up the possibility of approaching the county with the suggestion that the county waive its fiscal agent fee. We are and we are very, very grateful for the services we get. Office space from the county. We get meeting space to use at no cost. If you process my paycheck, please keep doing that. So all these things, you know, we think are good. You know, that you get to that you're willing to disperse all of these checks for a very nominal fee of a little over between $3,000 and $4,000. So believe me, it's not a complaint at all. We're really very happy with our relationship with Story County. But if you did so choose to renew our fiscal aid agreement with waiving that fee, I would assure you that those savings, that cost savings, would be put right back into direct program services. And because we did have to cut back on our contracts and number of scholarships for low-income families that we can offer. And with that request, and regardless of whether you say yes or no to that stipulation to waive the services, we definitely want to re-enter our fiscal agent agreement and continue working with Story County.
Yeah, so I have one question from what you wrote from us. So you say, we very much appreciate the accuracy, timeliness, and good cheer of the county employees we work with. So I'm good on two out of those three, but the lady sitting next to you, I'd never describe her as good cheer. You're really using that to describe Lisa Markley?
Well, I told you, you guys cut my check, so I have to. I always have to be keeping these on my
All right.
good side.
Thanks, Marianne. Appreciate your report. Really appreciate the request. I think it's completely appropriate for you to make the request and for us to have the discussion. Let's start with this. Let's start with how we got here. And I appreciate you noting that the county provides office space for you free. We provide meeting space when you need it free. Other kinds of resources. When we talked about the pot, so I was on the Boost Board when it was formed, and as we talked about doing all of this, and when we talked about the county assuming the fiscal agent responsibilities, we looked at several possibilities, determined that Story County was the right place as we looked at those possibilities, and at that time, Story County was also serving as the fiscal agent for another grant administration kind of thing, and we mirrored, and Lisa, you help me if I'm missing something here, Story County mirrored what we were charging as part of that other fiscal agent agreement that we had when we created this.
Somewhat. The other fiscal agent agreement was based on hours worked.
Okay. This was a flat percentage.
And this was a flat percentage. I looked at the revenue from that fiscal agent agreement, which we don't have anymore because that's defunct, but we were averaging about $10,700 a year on fiscal agent fees on that Homeland Security one.
Absolutely. Okay. This is the only fiscal agent agreement that we have now that is not set statutorily.
Correct.
Every other one that we provide is set in state code. So this is the one we have left that has some flexibility. And for me personally, I see no reason for the county to make any money at all providing these services, but I don't believe that we ought to utilize taxpayer dollars to supplement a service provider, because if we do it there, then if I'm another service provider, I'm lining up and saying, hey, provide the same thing for me. And so for me, and this is just me, it comes down to a question of, Lisa, what is it actually costing us? I would say primarily your time, but what is it actually costing us to serve this contract?
I put some numbers together. The additional responsibilities that I take care of are trial balances. DHS requires them to be done, early, way earlier than anybody else. So I take care of the trial balances. I'm going to say overall the time I spend on Boost would be between 30 and 40 hours a year.
Okay. And so what does 30 to 40 hours a year cost us in your time?
About $1,300-$1,400.
So for me, that's where I draw the line and say, to serve this contract, the county needs to be whole. We don't need to be any better than whole, but we need to be whole. And so as I do the math, that's more like a 3% rather than the 7% that we're charging.
We're actually charging 7.65. That's been the contract for the last few years.
Okay. So. But 3% would get us to where reasonably we're close to whole.
Close.
Not making anything on the deal.
Correct.
That's my thoughts.
And the space is vacant. It would have been vacant anyway.
Mm-hmm. I mean, no space is ever vacant for long if we don't make that. The space was vacant at the time.
Mm-hmm.
No space in the Human Services Center, if we don't hold on to it with both hands, stays vacant for long.
Okay, we definitely have had no real pressing request by a county department to push Marion out the door. Okay,
no.
Let's put it that way.
Well, not for
right.
space reason.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
Okay. That's right here.
I support definitely at least some kind of reduction. When I look at, I sit on the Boost Board, as you know, I'm the appointee for you guys. Appreciate that. And boy, and having to put our pencil to looking at this, when you translate it into scholarships for children, okay, I would appreciate anything we could do. to help put another scholarship or two into the program for that. I do understand that Lisa is valuable. So,
and it's not about my value. It's about
your time,
extra time spent on time.
And precedent. Because what we offer here, we've got to be willing to offer to any other group itself.
And I want to recognize and say thank you, because we do know that these are real costs that you're taking on in order to host this. And we also recognize that the reason the county agreed to do this, that we felt that on the whole, there's more benefit accrued to the county than the cost to the county by bringing in these funds. So we think it's a win-win for the taxpayers of the county as well as the direct beneficiaries of the program.
Yeah, and I think that when you guys became a local board, I think there was a code section that required that a public entity serve as your... You have to designate a public because MICA had served as the you were employer of record of MICA before that, and then the region, or not regionalization, but the combining, merging, required local or a public entity serve. So,
Marty, thoughts?
$1,300 makes us whole for your time.
So.
More or less.
Depends on how many times I have to, call in and say.
Small dollars, but I see where the state walk back would cause a true hardship impacting people's lives. I don't think if you leave the taxpayers held harmless, I don't see anything. It's not an unreasonable request. I have enjoyed our conversations about education and the deep dives that we've taken doing it. And we have seen the benefit of your interventions here on the booth side in this community. So I would say if $1,300 makes us whole, I would renounce the difference back to the booth.
Yeah, so are we talking about a flat rate of $1,300, or are we talking about
3%?
3%. Oh, I'm just looking at what it costs us. Chasing a...
I'm basing that approximately at 40 hours on 3% of the way your fiscal agreement reads is 3% or whatever percent of the director's salary.
And benefits.
I guess we are talking percentage then.
Okay.
And I think the percentage works because we've scaled it back, we know from a dollar figure, but then it helps us in moving forward and not having to have this conversation every time.
No.
We want $50 more. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. I think they need the dollars. Mm-hmm. Next question.
Absolutely. I move that we initiate the fiscal year 18 contract with Boost to reflect a 3% of salary and benefits for the administration fee.
Second. Motion is second. For those of you who like the inside baseball stuff, this is item J in our fiscal agent services agreement, and I have amended that to reflect going from 7%, which we now know is really 7.65, to 3%. So we'll need Travis to initial this change. He's already executed the contract, assuming it passes. Okay? Got a motion is second. Further conversation?
None.
Maren, anything to add?
Just on behalf of the board, thank you very much.
Absolutely. Lisa, anything to add?
Nope.
Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It passes at 3%, and so we'll need to get this copy initialed by Travis.
Okay.
Okay? Thank you. Thanks, Marion.
Thanks,
next item is acknowledge receipt of 2017 Urban Renewal Area Project Applications, discussion and consideration of review process and schedule. Leanne Harper. Good morning, Leanne.
Good morning.
Hey, something I did not mention at the top, and I hope that this is okay with the board, but when we get to 11:30, we got two more board and commission interviews to do, so I'd ask that we adjust as necessary when we get there. Leanne.
Prior to the meeting, I did put a small packet for the four applications we received this round of review. I was really glad yesterday Matt Boyk released the 2017 pictometry imagery, and I was able to now share that with you. Just starting with the schedule, it was placed on your agenda. The key dates are today, accepting the applications, and acknowledging receipt of the applications and approving the schedule. A consultation meeting notice would go out today. That consultation meeting would be about a month from today, with the 4th of July holiday. It seems I want to get them out earlier rather than later. That would be on the 18th of July. That same time, the four applicants would come present to the board. Similar to what we did last year, the board had the presentations and had the consultation meeting as a part of the meeting itself, which I think worked fairly well. Then the following week, the auditor's office would report to the board on available funds, and you would have a discussion on what potential amendments you would like staff to prepare. You won't be taking action on them, but giving staff direction to come back with proposed amendments. Then the resolution setting a public hearing the following week. At that point, actually directing staff to put the draft amendment or draft plan on the board on the county's website. And then finally, the public hearing would be on August 22nd. We have pushed it up substantially this year. I'm doing that in, for one reason. Tandem to this, the board's reviewing the urban renewal plan for the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor. The financing of that piece will require additional public hearings for loan agreements. So I wanted to try to separate them and let that process go out longer if necessary, keeping in mind the very important November dates and December dates for certifying debt.
Super. Thanks. So, Marty, you were part of this process last year, not the entire process, but you got to be around for the last few pieces of this process last year. Loris, this is the first time that you've been on this side of the table for this process. Conversation first, and then we're going to get back to acknowledgement of what we've received. Conversation first on the schedule that's before us, the process that we have laid out, and what, if any, tweaks or wholesale changes do we need to make?
I think what I got out of last year is the fact that our timeline was too long, and the fact that we've tightened up this year actually keeps it moving. And the concurrent discussion on Tedesco is also a consideration because you're going to be dealing with several weighty issues there.
Loris?
I'm fine with this. Just to clarify, Marty, it was too long because it ran into September, is what you're saying? Okay. All right. I'm fine with the timeline. It lays out very clearly what's going to happen at every step of it, which I really appreciate, I think, for the public, too, so that they can look at any point and know where they are in the process. So this, I'm very comfortable with this.
Okay. So first step for us is a motion acknowledging receipt of the 2017 Urban Renewal Project applications. There's four of them.
I would move acknowledgement of the Urban Renewal Projects as presented to us today.
I would second.
Okay. Go ahead.
Sorry about that. One of the applications itself did not have a dollar amount associated with it for the ask for the county.
And they've since added
that. So I would like to add the amendment that we accept them with the.
Okay, just acknowledging that they have added the $58,100 request.
I will acknowledge that they've added the $58,100 request from the city.
So we'll make sure that's part of the record.
Okay.
Is that two motions or one?
That's one motion. We're acknowledging these things. Loris is noting that there was not a dollar amount on the original. Now it's there.
Okay.
Further discussion on acknowledgement? Chitty?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Acknowledged receiving those. Now we're to the consideration portion of the review process and schedule, and I'm hearing no concerns. If that's true, I'd take a motion to adopt as proposed.
I would move consideration of the review process and schedule as presented.
I second.
Any further discussion?
None.
Chitty?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes as presented. Thanks, Leanne. Anything else that we need to be thinking about in regards to urban renewal?
No, thank you.
Thank you very much. All right. Next item is discussion and consideration of participating in the Iowa High Water Sign Initiative.
pardon me. this is an initiative that's come forth. The Silver Jackets are an organization, a partnership between the DNR, the Army Corps of Engineers, and some other entities in the state and actually throughout the nation. They have an initiative that Keith brought to me, my attention, called Iowa High Water Sign Initiative. It's an opportunity for the county to receive free signage that we could place, and I did speak with Darren Moon, our county engineer. Secondary roads would be responsible for placing the signs to memorialize where our high water flood events have occurred. There's some information on the history of the flooding event and the high water mark itself. And it would fit in very nicely with our community rating system outreach component. In fact, that's one of the questions that is on the application. I looked at a couple of different sites. I'm really leaning towards Riverside Road with the canoe access point. The access point at that point location and the little parking area would be a good location. So I'd work with conservation as well to get that sign placed accordingly and then get the appropriate floodplain permits too to have that sign erected on the site.
Super. Thank you. Questions for Leanne?
So is that the only place that jumps to mind where you would want to be placing these signs?
Yes. No, I have several. I think we can get one. Cameron School Road comes to mind. It would be access. The sign would be along the roadway itself, though, by the bridge, so there's not really opportunity for people to get out and read it and really have an opportunity to understand the ramifications of why that sign is placed there. That's why I really went to that Riverside Road location, because there is a parking area that people also south of Story City along the Skunk River there too, the Lefkoe Axis would be another location, but I think because of the population that go on Riverside Road and actually use that location, that would be the preferred location.
Is it possible then for you to share this with our municipalities, or did they get a separate notice?
I think Keith did already.
Oh, okay.
He sent it on to each jurisdiction.
Okay. Thank you. That was my only question.
Good. Yeah. If there's nothing further, I'd take a motion.
I move that we have Leanne move forward with participating in the Iowa High Water Sign Initiative.
Second. Motion and a second. Further discussion. Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It passes. Thanks, Leanne. Next item is discussion and consideration of Kurt Friedrich in his role with Friedrich Land Development Company request to submit an Ames Urban Fringe Plan map amendment. Jerry.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, morning Jerry.
As you mentioned, this is a request, Ames Urban Fringe Plan map amendment application request. Again, the applicant is Kurt Friedrich, Friedrich Land Development. This item was before the City of Ames already. They've taken action to support the request to submit the application. Mr. Friedrich did acquire three parcels south of Cameron School Road, west of George Washington Carver. It consists of about 100 acres. The current land use designation is priority transitional residential. Again, it's in the Ames River Fringe Plan, currently in the unincorporated portion of the county. He has interest in developing it residentially, various types, single family, multifamily, and then I think there's still interest in doing some commercial closer as you get to the intersection. So again, it's in the Ames River Fringe Plan, currently zoned A1 Agricultural District. Just to give you an idea, the current minimum lot size is a 35-acre lot. There's exceptions for farmsteads, legal lots of record, and then if it meets the LISA exception, there's ways to reduce the lot size down to a one-acre lot. So with priority transitional, it's primarily a land use designation that captures the urban and the rural connections. You can get up to 3.75 units per acre or smaller, so you're talking about a little over 11,000 square foot lot. What's being requested is the urban residential designation. With that designation, you're able to annex and then develop under the city's development standards. With what's being proposed with conventional medium density residential development, it would be about 5 units per acre, a little over 8,000 square foot minimum lot size. This is the aerial for the area. Again, we're in Northwest Ames. The Ames corporate limits is shown in red. The yellow area represents the parcels that Mr. Friedrich did acquire. Again, we're west of George Washington Carver, south of Cameron School Road. This is the map from the city of Ames. It shows you the planned growth areas. They've got the north growth area and then the northwest growth area. The area that Mr. Friedrichs acquired, the land, is between the two, and so they're calling this the North Gap area. The City Planning and Housing Department did meet with our department. They requested a consultation on Friday, June 9, to kind of go over what was being requested. Their review of the request, they think it's timely to include potentially the Borgmeyer property, which is these. There's 4 separate parcels. Which is designated priority transitional. It would also include the Irons and then the Ames Golf and Country Club, which has a rural transitional and a parks and recreation designation. The Ames planning staff believe that this would be a good time to change those designations to urban residential, again, to include it in an annexation and have it developed under the city's development standards. So we did send notices last week to property owners within a quarter mile of the 3 parcels. We actually received one phone call that there was a heron rookery located somewhere on one of the 3 parcels. We did communicate that to the city staff when we received that. This map shows you what they're calling the Northern Gap area. Again, it's between the north and the northwest proposed growth areas. The crosshatch represents Mr. Friedrich's property. To the northeast is the Ames Golf and Country Club and the Irons, which is along 190th and George Washington Carver, and then the Borgmeyer properties to the east. It's from the land use framework map. Land use designation, again, is priority transitional. X marks the spot. Those are the 3 parcels that were acquired. The southwest portion is designated natural areas. There's also some floodplain in that southwest portion that would need to be considered. Snapshot of the zoning for this area. The property, again, is outlined in red. It is contiguous to R1 residential zoning to the north and west. You've got Squaw Valley to the north, Bella Woods, to the west, Northwood Heights, and then the Irons to the northeast, that is R2 zoned, and then everything else is A1 agricultural district. So the Ames planning staff did put together a memo, which was pretty good, laying out some background information. Their view of this, and again, this is a lot of information for what you're dealing with, but it helps for when you get to that point, if you want to get to that point. They came up with 3 options. One is to keep it priority transitional. It would stay in the county. Development would be 3.75 units per acre. With that, though, there's a community water and sewer requirement. There would be requirements for agreeing to annex, buying out rural water, paying fair share of utilities. It would require a rezoning, though, and likely with what's being proposed would not meet our zoning requirements, which brings to option 2 to include with the request the Borgmeyer, Ames Golf and Country Club, and the Irons properties into the fold, requesting to change it to urban residential and then again annex and develop under city standards. The last option is a potential change to rural transitional, which will allow a density between 1 acre to 3.75. It would stay in the county. Again, there would be requirements to enter into agreements for development, infrastructure assessments, annexation, and again, it would require a zoning change.
But none of that's for today. That's all the conversation would be, right. If we say, yeah, we're willing to have the conversation.
Correct.
And that's all we're talking about today. We're not talking about approving anything. We're talking about just agreeing to have the conversation of what this might look like and how the plan might, not even that the plan will change, just the urban fringe plan may change.
Right. Right. I give you probably.
And I appreciate that. I just want to make sure we don't get lost that we're trying to make some big decision today.
Right.
And so where I am is this has been fairly routine in the past that sure we're willing to have the conversation if one of the two other entities, Gilbert and Ames, want to have it with us on any of this. There's two things I'd like us to consider as we hopefully move forward to agreeing to be part of the conversation. One, dealing specifically with this area is we've got intersection problems on George Washington Carver and Cameron School Road. Part of this conversation has to be how we're going to work with Ames to address those problems and developers to address those issues that are coming, that are already there and coming more. Got to have that conversation. And the second one is not directly tied to this, but something that I've made noise about now for the last year. It is my hope and expectation that late in 2017, we're going to reopen the entire northern tier of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan with the reality that we're completing paving a road between Ames and Gilbert, and that is going to change everything between 190th and Gilbert, and that entire conversation needs to be had as well. That's not part of this one,
right,
but all of these things need to be bubbling underneath. Questions for Jerry?
Jerry, can you help me with natural areas? In your memo, in the first paragraph, it says part of the property is designated natural areas. What does that mean from a development standpoint? Should we not be developing there?
Well, it's primarily where it's the light green color. So it's
so along the
west of where that mature tree growth is. And I think before Kurt went to the city of Ames, he came to the planning staff here at County. We had some initial discussions about it. I don't think that he has an intention to develop those areas. There's some things that he was taking out, maybe using some of that for stormwater detention, park and recreation, that kind of thing. But usually it should be low impact.
Be low impact or left alone. Okay.
Yeah, and the interesting part about that, Morris, if you look at the light green, look at it, the entire Squaw Valley is located within
right,
the light green.
Right.
It's in it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's in the floodplain.
Right.
Okay. The way I look at this is similar to the way I look at prior restraint. I'm very much concerned anybody wants to do a prior restraint by stopping someone. And so to stop anyone from making an application just doesn't make any sense to me. Okay. Yes, I know. Everybody's going, oh, wait. I hear, yeah, you're just, if I understand this correctly, Kurt's just asking if he can go ahead and make the application.
Correct.
So I would think if we voted no, we would be doing prior restraint. And even though this is not all about publishing or whatever, I really think that you know, anybody has a right to make an application.
The city of Ames took action on the 9th of May to accept the application submittal.
Okay.
It would be unprecedented in the framework that has been the Ames Urban Fringe Plan that we would not be willing to participate in the conversation.
Right.
Gary, Gilbert didn't weigh in on this, did they?
They were not at the consultation meeting, and I don't know that they've weighed on it yet. I've not heard.
Yeah. We've already been here. It's a natural progression. I don't see anything that causes me deep pains.
And all that's needed is a motion.
Is that a motion to permit him to make the application?
Yep.
I move that we permit Friedrich Land Development to make an application to look at land use framework map amendment.
Second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion. Kurt, anything you want to add? Come up closer so we can hear you on the audio if you have anything to add. Thanks for coming over tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Jerry did a nice job of describing the history. We did buy the properties here about a year ago, and the city of Ames, I might add, has done a sewer study to look at capacity for serving this area and believes that there is capacity with appropriate remedies to serve this area. So the city is really, as it is evidenced in the vote that they took here in May, wanting to see this ultimately be incorporated into the city. It seems like a natural extension of the city from Scenic Valley. And incidentally, this is exactly the same process that was gone through when Cory Estates was first brought about and Scenic Valley. Both were identified in the county's comprehensive development plan as priority transitional residential and then converted to urban services with the end goal being annexation and potential development. So that's, we're just following the same pattern that these other neighborhoods did as well.
I just have one question, but it doesn't impact this at all. It's probably more down the road than the irons. Does it impact anything we've done with the irons so far? Okay.
Yeah, it's just really catty corner from this, yeah. Right? That's
developed primarily under the city standards.
Okay, so there's really no. All right.
So this is Xenia, is the water service stuff there?
It is presently.
Okay.
But if it were incorporated into the city, it would.
I'm just saying their presence is there, right?
Yes. Yes.
And they're willing to negotiate?
Pardon?
And they're willing to negotiate?
Yes.
We just have stories over here that aren't that quite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had successfully negotiated with Xenia for example, with Scenic Valley and also with Cory Estates and the other properties that are developing along Hyde adjacent to Ada Hayden Park.
Congratulations there. Anything further?
None.
Let's see. Remind me, did we have a motion?
Yes.
Okay. Who made it?
Loris.
Loris. Okay, so Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Passes.
Thank
Kurt,
you.
We look forward to the conversation. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, ma'am. Let's see. Done. Discussion and consideration of United Way of Story County's request for $3,300 for the summer enrichment services provided at Collins Elementary School. Deb Shildroth and Deb Shildroth. I don't see Gene. This will be the last one we'll do, and then, let's see, unless we're, well, we're there. Oh, good. Of course, I'm perfect.
All right. Good morning. Jean is not able to be with us this morning, so I will carry forward the request. We received the letter as part of the agenda packet. The Summer Enrichment Program is a service that United Way piloted in 2013, I believe that started in Nevada, and it has grown since then. And YSS is the agency that provides the service component to summer enrichment. And they are doing a pilot project in the Collins-Maxwell School District this summer for the month of June. And as indicated in that letter, there are 77 children enrolled in the program, many more than what they anticipated.
Awesome. Yep.
And they are very excited about that.
Substantial amount of their elementary, too. I don't know on percentage what it is, but for 77 in that school district, that's a lot of what they have.
Right. And again, they're just doing it for the month of June, so by the end of this month, they will have real numbers. But with that growth in that particular area of the program, they were looking at some additional funding to help support the food portion of the summer enrichment program. So that's what the $3,300 is about. We should have funding in fiscal year 17 within the asset allocation that is not going to be utilized or drawn down by agencies, so there is funding available through that stream. It'd be general fund dollars if the board so chooses to use those.
But money that has already been allocated to the asset process, but not utilized.
Correct.
Okay.
And I do want to note that summer enrichment is included in the asset process, so there are dollars allocated for it in fiscal year 18 across all funders with the exception of the region and government student body. There is $47,500 from the city, the county, and United Way, and that's funded at about 92% of the ask through YSF.
Questions?
We have success over here. We're doing our fifth year with this programming. We're seeing the increases in our fast testing. I'm glad to see that the school board in the Collins-Maxwell area thought this was something they wanted to bring to themselves. I think they, too, will have the success by doing this. I think this is small dollars for increasing academic proficiency. The kids that will benefit most from this are the ones we worry most about when they show up in August.
Right. And as you pointed out, Deb, this does not impact the budget at all because we're talking about in the fiscal year, this is money that hasn't been used in the asset process, drawn down. And so it's not like we're even taking it out of the general fund for it. And I think it's great, 77 kids. I was doing the math thinking, man, that's over 10% of the population of Collins. I know they come from two different districts, but so anyway, I'd make a motion that we approve up to $3,300 for the summer enrichment services at Collins Elementary School that is provided by YSS. That's the correct provider.
Yep. Motion a second, and just to clarify, you underscored this. I'm going to underscore it again. These up to $3,300 are supposed to come from existing dollars that were not drawn down in the asset process. Further conversation?
None.
Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It passes. Thanks, Deb.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Next is discussion and consideration of applicant Lee Bauer for the vacancy on the VA Commission. So I'll remind the board we've had